Hello and welcome to another edition of ID the Future. I'm Todd Butterfield. Perhaps you've noticed, connecting people to Nazism today is commonplace in public discourse. Liberals, conservatives alike, they accuse each other of being such. But what's the truth about Hitler? In Richard Weikert's book, Hitler's Religion, The Twisted Beliefs That Drove the Third Reich, the reader will be completely informed about the historical facts about what Hitler really believed. In this most extensive treatment of the topic to date in the English language, you, the listener, ought to know the truth so we can speak and think accurately. Dr. Weikert has pulled all of the information together in a very readable format, and it's outlined in a very clear way so you can follow it from beginning to end. He's a professor of history at California State University Stanislaus and a senior fellow for the Center for Science and Culture of the Discovery Institute. Welcome to the show, Dr. Weikert.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You bet. So your book teases the reader by initially suggesting that many Christians in early Nazi Germany saw Hitler as very supportive of Christians and Christianity. What made them think that he was leaning their direction?
Well, there were two main reasons. One is that he said so. So he tried to portray himself as Christian in many of his speeches, especially when he was facing controversy and dissent and people who were accusing him of not being Christian. He sort of bent over backwards to say, oh, yeah, I am. And there's a famous speech in April 1922 where he called Jesus his Lord and Savior. So he tried to portray himself as a Christian many times. The second reason, though, is that sometimes they were enamored with his policies relating to morality. That is, he was stressing getting away from the Weimar godlessness, as some people saw it, the nudity, the profanity, the kinds of things that were beginning to creep into a lot of culture in Germany in the 1920s. And some people saw him as being an antidote for a lot of the immorality, the prostitution, all the other things that were going on in the Weimar period.
Well, it's kind of fascinating to hear you describe that, because he used their distaste for those particular topics and connected it to Christianity, it sounds like. But is that the extent of his connection to Christianity, was putting down and trying to eliminate those things?
Well, in terms of his real connection with Christianity, even he wasn't even really that concerned about those things either in some respects. I mean, if you look like at the issue of sexual morality, for example, even though he portrayed himself as standing up for the family and various kinds of Christian morality, in reality, he himself was sexually immoral.
Mm.
He had a mistress behind the scenes, never got married to her till the last day of his life. And he sort of winked at the homosexuality of people like Ernst Röhm, who was one of his right-hand men in the 1920s and early 1930s, until Hitler turned against him in June and July of 1934, when he had Ernst Röhm executed.
Mm.
But he didn't care about his homosexuality until it became convenient to trot it out into public and say, you know, this is one of the ways that Röhm was this immoral person. So Hitler used these kind of moral themes as propaganda tools to gain the sympathies of people, even though behind the scenes he didn't really subscribe to them himself.
He made a reference to a resentment toward Christianity, even though he was appeasing Christians. He didn't like it because it was connected to Judaism.
Yeah, there are actually a number of reasons why he didn't like Christianity. In fact, one of the great ironies is that Hitler very often, mostly in private, he didn't do this in public very often, although occasionally he does in public too, he very often criticized Christianity for being intolerant of all things. Can you imagine this?
Hmm.
Hitler claimed that Christianity had been wrong to put forward the Inquisition, the Crusades. You know, Hitler saw those as being horrible things that the church had done. And so, just like many secularists today, he was criticizing the church for its violence. I mean, that seems kind of hard to fathom considering Hitler's own intolerance. But interestingly, there's a clue to that in his second volume of Mein Kampf, where Hitler actually said that, and here he was talking about the Christian churches, he called them a spiritual terror, and he said that terror has to be met with terror. Mm. So Hitler was well willing to use terror against the churches when it suited him. Usually that quotation I just gave you from the second volume of Mein Kampf was actually pretty unusual, though, because Hitler was usually much more circumspect in trying to mollify the churches and to stay on their good side, and he wasn't critical publicly all that often. But he also was critical of the churches for teaching humility, meekness. He said, you know, we're supposed to teach strength and power and hatred against our enemies, not loving your enemy. He was very critical of the Sermon on the Mount, very explicitly. He said, that's just not the way to live. Turning the other cheek is just not proper.
So a lot of contradictions in what he said and what he thought and what he did. Sounds like he was really just using Christianity to gain an advantage toward the bigger picture that he had in his mind.
Yeah, that's clear. And in fact, he even said that at one point when he was in prison after the beer hall putsch. This was in 1924. Rudolf Hess, one of Hitler's very close associates, was in jail with Hitler. And he and some associates were having a conversation about religion, and Hitler stayed aloof. But after the conversation was over, Hitler talked privately with Hess and told Hess that he was playing the hypocrite relating to Christianity, that he really couldn't divulge his antipathy for Christianity publicly because he knew it would be suicide politically.
Remind me, what was the reason that Hitler was in jail at that time?
He had launched a putsch attempt or a coup attempt against the Bavarian government in November of 1923. He'd been arrested and then was given a 5-year jail sentence. He only served a little more than a year of that, though.
Was there any true connection between Adolf Hitler and the occult, as many people have theorized?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, because there were actually a number of Nazis that were involved in the occult. Rudolf Hess, whom I already mentioned just a minute ago, was very interested in astrology and other occult things. Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS, was also very interested in neo-paganism and astrology and other kinds of occult things. But interestingly, the Nazis weren't of one mind on this particular question. Hitler was actually anti-occult, as was Goebbels, and as was Heydrich. So there was differences of opinion among the Nazis, but there was a really interesting episode that happened that I uncovered as I was doing my work on my book, where when Rudolf Hess flew to England and bailed out over Scotland to try to broker a deal with the British, which Hitler washed his hands of that whole affair and said that Hess had gone mad, Hitler actually blamed the astrologers for having sort of put Hess up to that and sort of made Hess sort of go off the brink, I guess. So Hitler ordered the police forces in Germany to round up the astrologers and prognosticators throughout Germany, and they did, and they threw them in concentration camps. This was in early June of 1941. Himmler, who was involved in that roundup, since he's the head of the police forces and the SS, interestingly, he himself also was dabbling in the occult, actually took one of the astrologers who'd been rounded up in the sweep, a guy named Wilhelm Wolf, and made him his personal astrologer. So while all the other ones were languishing in the concentration camps and prisons, Wilhelm Wolf was able to get on the good side of Himmler, and Himmler was actually still using the occult. So when you see shows that talk about the Nazi occult, yes, some members were quite involved in it, but Hitler actually was critical of it, again, had them rounded up and put in jail, and also privately criticized Himmler and Hess and others for their interest and involvement in the occult.
Although he seems to be a man of contradictions, he would round people up when they were getting in his way, but later it seems like he would take the same folk and incorporate them into his plans. At least that's the way it appears to me.
Yeah, if they were German and fit the racial types, at least, yeah.
You say that he referred to God in public, but didn't really believe in prayer, and you've already alluded to a couple of other contradictions of that nature. Are there any other things to know about what he did not believe that we would find in your book?
Well, interestingly, there's a lot of people who, because he committed such horrific acts and because he clearly had hatred toward Christianity, there's some who would say that, well, Hitler must have been an atheist. And I don't think that's quite proper either. He does refer to God, Providence. And sometimes it may be somewhat impersonal, his approach toward God, and sometimes maybe not even completely coherent. That is, I'm not sure Hitler had a completely coherent notion of metaphysics and such. But he does seem to have some kind of idea about there being a higher power. And then this does sort of come through, not just in his public speeches where he's doing it for the sake of the public, but also in his private talks where he does talk extensively about providence. When there were assassination attempts on Hitler, for example, he made the claim that it was providence keeping him from being harmed. And he does seem to really believe that. It doesn't seem to be just something for public consumption. It does seem to be sort of a very internal notion that he has that, yes, there is some kind of higher being. And as far as I can tell, and I've studied Hitler and this particular question more extensively than just about anyone, Hitler never claimed that he was an atheist, never claimed that all that he believed in was that matter and energy exist. He never made that claim, either in public or in private. So while he does talk extensively about God and belief in providence, he never dismisses that, even among his closest associates.
What are some of the historical facts and surprises that people will learn about Hitler's actual pantheistic views in your book? Is there some things you want just to say, well, get the book and find it? Or
well, actually, yeah, I do argue, as you're suggesting, that Hitler was a pantheist. So his notion of God is perhaps somewhat impersonal in some ways. He identifies God and nature. That's what it is to be a pantheist, to believe that everything in the cosmos is the same as God. But interestingly, he does also have this notion that there's somehow a will to nature out there that's sort of beyond ourselves too. So there's sort of this mystical idea in his notion of nature as well. So one of the interesting things that I found when I was looking at doing the research in this book is that sort of corroborates this notion of his pantheistic views is that during one of his monologues, he claimed that they ought to go and tear down this Catholic church, which is right above Linz. That's where he grew up in Austria. He thought they ought to tear down this Catholic church and build a planetarium and observatory. And so this, again, shows his rejection of Catholicism and the church because he wants to tear down the church. But then he thought that he expressed the hope that Germans would come on Sunday mornings instead of going to church, would come to this observatory and planetarium where they could behold the wonders of nature. They could see the wonders of the cosmos. And this seems to be a recurrent theme in Hitler, trying to cultivate this awe and wonder of nature. And he does this also in Mein Kampf and other of his writings and speeches by really deifying, certainly personifying, and I would argue even deifying nature in many cases. In fact, if you read the standard English translation of Mein Kampf, and actually I've looked at other translations of Mein Kampf and they do the same thing, they actually capitalize the word nature when Hitler refers to it, showing that the translators understood that he was personifying nature.
So fascinating. You clearly just have at the tip of your tongue the deep knowledge of this man in your research. And at this point, it really kind of begs a person to have to reach out and get the book themselves. But you're also, if I'm not mistaken, available to speak more on this topic. Is that true?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm willing to come speak to various groups. I've done quite a number of radio interviews and podcasts already on it, and I'm certainly willing to keep talking about it, sure.
What would be the easiest way for people to contact you?
Probably just to go to my university website. Probably the fastest way is to do a Google search. It's a pretty long address, web address. Just do a Google search for my name, W-E-I-K-A-R-T, at my university, Cal State Stanislaus. You'll find my email address pretty quickly along there.
Dr. Weikert, thank you so much. We are better informed. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I encourage you, the listener, as you've heard me say, to get a copy of this book and read the amazing facts for yourself. Until next time, this has been Todd Butterfield with Dr. Richard Weikert for ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.